In October, Wisconsin Public Television is going to release a new round of Wisconsin Life. We've got a lot of fresh episodes coming up, and here to give us a preview of some of these episodes is Joe Waldinger. He's a producer for Wisconsin Public Television. Joel, welcome back.
Thank you.
And for our first episode, it's going to air Monday, October 6th. We've got a story centering around bald eagles. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that's right. I spent a day with Mike Meyer, who works for the Department of Natural Resources. He spent the past 25 years doing bald eagle research in Wisconsin, and he's come across hundreds of bald eagles that he's helped ban for his research purposes.
So these aren't injured eagles. These are a part of his project to see how the eagles are doing as a species.
Yeah, absolutely. They want to monitor the population of Wisconsin. Wisconsin's eagle population, which continues to grow. They're also tracking migration and nesting habits of these eagles, and they also keep mortality records, how eagles are dying in Wisconsin, that type of thing. Main part of his research is actually to check contaminants, PCB and pesticide levels from 25 years ago to is the environment improving for bald eagles in Wisconsin, and his research is finding it. Yes, indeed it is.
All right, we've got a clip of that one. Let's take a listen.
It's no easy feat to reach an eagle's nest in white pines that can grow 100 feet straight up in what's described as a super canopy tree.
When they build the nest, they don't make it convenient for the climber.
Each tree is a different high wire act.
He's got to find a way around the edge of the nest but still stay attached to the tree.
Getting around a nest that can be 4 to 5 feet in diameter can present a unique and sometimes dangerous encounter.
Wow, sounds fascinating. So were you there on the ground while this guy's climbing up in the trees?
We were. We went with him on three separate nests, and the day that we went, it happened to be extremely windy. So you can imagine what that was like to try to climb to the top of this tree 75 feet to 100 feet in the air with winds gusting, and then at the same time try to maneuver around the nest and then get the baby eaglets and lower them to the ground.
Did you go up to get sound?
We didn't. We mounted a camera on his helmet.
There you
and
go.
We got spectacular video because of the wind gusts. These eagles are actually full grown at 6 to 8 weeks of age and ready to fly. So with these wind gusts, if they open their wings at any moment, the gust could literally blow the baby eagles out of the nest. And in this case, there were two eagles in one nest, and the camera captures them clinging literally to the side of the nest with their wings open. And it's tense. You think at any moment one of these eagles could go, and the researchers on the ground were actually quite concerned.
Well, did you get close yourself in the lab? Maybe not up in the tree, but at another time?
Yeah, the lab is actually on the ground below the tree. They lower the eagles down in a knapsack, basically, and take them out, take blood samples, feather samples, and then they ban them for their research. And then they raise them back up to the climber in the tree, who takes them out of the bag and places them back in the nest. Mother eagle, by the way, is soaring overhead the entire time, but you know, most people would think that aggressive, the eagle would dive bomb into the nest or something with the researcher up there, but it doesn't happen. She actually stays a distance away and maybe makes some calls and things like that, but never actually attempts to get in the nest when the climber's up there.
That's a relief. They seem to have very sharp beaks and talons.
But they do. It's a dangerous job.
Sounds fascinating being up there so high and getting the bird's eye view of the eagle. Sorry, you have to forgive me. I had to say it. Let's go into another piece here. You're also featuring a piece on dresses that were designed in World War II, and there's a lot of backstory to this, a lot of history, and It's a sad one, but it's also kind of beautiful.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories, actually. Paul and Hedy Stranad were Jews trapped in Czechoslovakia after the Germans had occupied their homeland. They had this ingenious idea. Hedy was a dress designer, and so she designed 8 dresses and sent the dress designs to relatives in Milwaukee who had some connections. And the hope was that she could get these dresses made and then emigrate to the United States. It's a story that the Jewish Museum Milwaukee has tried to keep alive over the years.
And we've got a clip from this episode. Here it is.
It touched my heart then, and I knew that it would be important.
It was a letter.
In 1997, we had a Jewish archives, and Bert Stranad came in, and he said, I have these pictures from my father. I opened up the packet, and here were these 8 dress designs. The story, of course, is they were seeking help in leaving Prague because the Germans had already entered the country.
The 8 dress designs, created by Paul's wife, Hedy Stranad, could be their ticket out. The Stranads had Jewish relatives in Czechoslovakia that owned a clothing store, just like their Jewish relatives in Milwaukee.
I have sent you some of the dress designs my wife made, and I hope the dress manufacturers you mentioned in your letter were like them.
If an American dressmaker picked up the designs, it could provide financial stability for the Stranads, helping them secure immigration papers.
I don't know if you want to give away the whole thread of that, because there is a bit of a mystery involved in this one. But the dresses, they did get made years and years later, but they got made.
They did. Unfortunately, the Stranads did not make it out of Czechoslovakia. They ended up being sent to the Warsaw Ghetto and were killed at the hands of the Nazis. About 15 years ago, these dress designs came to the Jewish Museum Milwaukee, which when it opened became the central focus of their Holocaust exhibit. About a year or so ago, someone said, wouldn't it be great if we fulfill Hetty's wishes and we make these dresses? So over the course of the past year, working with Milwaukee Repertory Costume Shop, these theater designers actually produced the dresses that Hetty had designed. And they're now on display at the Jewish Museum Milwaukee as part of an exhibit called Stitching History from the Holocaust.
What do they look like?
They're fabulous, actually. They're very classic. You know, I asked one of the founders of the Jewish Museum Milwaukee, how would you describe these dresses? And she said they're classic and they're dresses that every woman would want in her closet.
And when does that one air for people who want to catch that particular one?
Yeah, that one's going to air on Monday, October 13th at 8 p.m. on Wisconsin Life on Wisconsin Public Television.
Gotcha. And we'll move on to another one now. This is a story about an amphicar. Am I saying that right? What is it?
Yeah. Amphibious car, amphicar for short.
Okay.
You know, it's part car, part boat, 50-50 surf and turf, as we say. In other words, it's a car you can take right up to the boat launch and drive it into the water. It's based on a World War II German military design.
Is this like the things that you see in the Dells, the ducks? Is it something like that?
It's similar, but it's much smaller than that. It's basically seats four people. It was designed in the 60s. It's a small car. On top, it looks like a convertible, which it is. It's a convertible top. Underneath, you have the four wheels like a car, but you also have two propellers. And so that allows it to navigate in the water.
Did you get to ride in this thing?
We did ride in it. Yeah, we did. Up in Sturgeon Bay, Russ Seeler is... found one of these amphicars on a farm field and bought it. First saw it as a 16-year-old kid, bought it, tore it completely apart, and restored it. And now you can see him driving around the Sturgeon Bay Ship Canal in it.
All right, here's a little bit of that one.
Every time I go in, you just get the heebie-jeebies a little bit. You wonder, you know, if everything's going to be okay. And we're pretty cocky at first. And I like to power into the wakes and make a big splash. Well, one rolled up right over the hood and right over the top of the windshield, and it was like 2 5-gallon pails of smelly bay water in our laps, and it's all vinyl seats and rubber floor mat, and it just trickles down the bilge. Almost every time when we pull out, there's a few people that ask me, did you just come out of the water? You know, they don't know what to say, but it's hilarious.
Okay, so you said it's a... quite an experience being in that car. Is it, I don't know, is it cool? Would you want to do it again?
It is very neat to do. It's a little bit wobbly. I mean, I rode along because you need to balance the car with just the driver in, like in a boat leaning to one side, the passenger balances it. You know, on the highway, it's a little rickety. It's a little shaky, as he would admit to. You know, it's not really built for speed. It's built for the cool factor.
I see. So maybe not a lot with the suspension, because maybe you don't want that in the water.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to stick with our water theme here. Now, this is a story about Sturgeon Bay, but we're going to move into the caves now. Tell us about the caves in Sturgeon Bay.
Yeah, the caves in Sturgeon Bay are really unique in Door County in and of themselves. They're wild. Wild in the sense that you never know what you're going to find when you go into the caves, bears or raccoons or snakes or other animals. And wild in the sense that they're millions of years old. And in many parts of these caves, they're still in their natural setting that they were millions of years ago.
Now, it's interesting. I know about the Lake Superior caves, but I guess I haven't heard as much about Lake Michigan caves. Are they similar in the sorts of things you'll find, or are they their own thing?
Yeah, there are the caves right along the shoreline, but then there are also caves that are inland. In fact, there's one in downtown Sturgeon Bay that's in the basement of a senior living center.
Wow.
It was discovered when they dug the basement in 1972. There's no natural entrance to this cave. It was created by an earthquake millions of years ago, and the only entrance is through the basement of the senior living center.
Do the seniors go down there? Do they use it? Or is it more just a curiosity in a while?
It's more for researchers. Yeah. I mean, it takes a little maneuvering to climb through the entrance to the cave to get actually back into an area where you can stand up.
Okay, well, let's listen to a little from that episode.
Gary has spent a lifetime exploring caverns around the world and even discovered the Diamond Room of Paradise Pit Cave in southern Door County.
I started back in 1961. It was April 14th. I happened to see Mammoth Cave in Kentucky and took the historic tour, and I've been hooked for over half a century now.
Hooked, despite a few close calls.
Right here in Door County was probably the worst one I had, where I had a tight area, I had to keep my hands to my side, and it was wiggling forward, and all of a sudden, as I looked up, here's a live skunk. And let me tell you, if you want to learn how to reverse cave in a hurry, you'll learn real fast.
I don't know, that doesn't sound good, a live skunk in a tiny cave. Did that end well?
It did end okay. Gary got out without any problems. But, you know, he thrives on that kind of thing. You know, it's whatever his headlamp, you know, shines on that lures him deeper into the cave.
Fantastic. Now, did you go down to the cave as well?
We went into the cave in the basement of the Dorchester Cave, which it sounds, we were told, oh, you got to crawl for about 10 or 20 feet. Well, what he didn't tell us is it was more like maneuvering like a snake over these huge boulders to get in, scraping along, you know, on the bottom to get to an area where you could actually stand up.
Wow. Well, I'm glad it wasn't me. Glad it was you and Gary. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that'll be fun to watch. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us about the next season.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking with Joe Waldinger, producer for Wisconsin Public Television. He was with us to give a preview of what's coming up on the Wisconsin Life TV series this month. New episodes are starting October 6th and air Monday nights at 8 o'clock p.m.